Hello and a very good evening to you. My name's David Jay. Welcome to the July edition of On the Front Foot, Susie Radio's cricket chat show. We're going to get straight on with things because we've got a whole bundle of stuff to talk about tonight. We thought we might not see Tim Bowling this evening, but Tim, you've made it. Hello, good evening.
Good evening, David. How are you?
I'm okay, thank you. Warm enough, and it's going to be warm here in the studio, I imagine. But Trevor Stevens is our guest for the entire show, although he's going to take a little break halfway through. Trevor Stevens from Hawley Cricket Club, lovely to have you back on the front foot.
Thanks, David. Nice to see you both again.
It's very good to see you. Trevor, let's kick off, if we may, with the Hawley stuff, and I must ask you, what are the club's arrangements for the World Cup this Saturday afternoon?
That's a good question, because I remember last time we were in the World Cup, or was it the Euros or something, they actually came with an arrangement where we had tea was arranged between the innings so we could watch the football, which didn't actually help us because we were all out before tea and the other side had got the run, so we were free to watch. But I haven't heard any directives yet of whether we can start early and have tea over the football match, so interested to hear.
They were talking about this on Sky Sports last night, the T20 televised game, and I know that all kinds of arrangements are being made in the Sussex League, which I have a bit to do with these days. So anyway, you'll wait until you get there where are Hawley on Saturday?
We're at Effingham tomorrow, so we're not too far to go.
Okay, well, that's I'm sure something will be sorted out. I thought I would ask, and what I also ought to ask you, Trevor, absolutely straight away, because we've spent lots of time on the show talking about it, and Howard Cohen, the Umpires Association Education Officer, was with us back in the winter. Trevor, have the new laws impinged in any way at all on the league matches that you've played with Hawley?
I can't really say I've noticed any impact as such. We have the usual disputes at times to interpret overrates and things like that, but the new rules as such, I don't think we've had any notable impact. I think everyone carries on, plays the game, and then when the issue arises, everyone sort of, oh, hang on, didn't know about that.
This is what I think we hoped would happen, that you know, four levels of transgression, and also this incredibly complicated business, Tim, of penalty time, which, yeah, I still don't fully understand.
You may well remember the evening we spent at the Umpires Association, and it was trying to actually decipher the new rules, especially the penalty time was well, let's say it was an interesting evening, but it was quite difficult to try and work out what the rules meant, put it that way.
Yeah, I think simplicity is a virtue. When you've got, sometimes you've got to revert to self-umpiring and so forth, then it really does get too complicated. So common sense needs to prevail, really, I think.
Well, we've said before as well, Trevor, so often as you get down the levels, it's poor old 9-10 and Jack wearing the white coat anyway. Umpire, sometimes not even qualified. It's all very, very difficult. It's all predicated on the professional game. Just before we move on, Trevor, to talk about Hawley, how do you see the 100 ball business? Because I know you've got strong feelings about it, and we don't want to get ourselves sidetracked back into T20 too much later on tonight.
I just don't really see the need for another variation. I think 20 overs is entrenched. If we want to have a high-profile 2020, we have it in the UK. We don't need to change the format. We just attract some good players, restrict the number of teams, and make it higher level.
It just seems to us, doesn't it, Tim, that you're messing about with the actual laws again.
Yeah.
When they've just been rewritten, you've got to be able to accommodate this 10-ball over.
I mean, I think, to be honest, personally, I think the only reason they brought in this sort of 100-over thing is to try and differentiate it from the county T20 tournament, which is going to be running alongside it. If they were only running one T20 tournament, there would have been no need to have any differentiation. But because they're trying to run both of them, they're going to try and make it different. And they've come up with this idea of 100 balls. I agree with you, Trevor. This is ridiculous. I don't understand why they're bringing it in.
A 10-ball over is ludicrous. I think that it's bad enough bowling six sometimes, so bowling 10 or more.
And of course, there's talk that it might be more than one bowler allowed to get involved, and then it's not an over.
No, it's just nonsense.
It just becomes too complex.
And somebody said to me they're chasing these supposed new fans to whom all this will appeal rather as Love Island does and stuff like that. In actual fact, they're not really the people the game should be chasing. They should be consolidating for their genuine fans.
I can't see how that format will attract anybody extra over and above an evening T20 game at the Oval or at Lords. I can't see what difference this is going to make. They make it sound like it's some sort of epiphany that they've come across this amazing idea that's going to revolutionise cricket. It's not going to make any difference whatsoever. If anything, it's going to saturate the game even more with more T20 cricket and just make T20 less appealing, not more appealing.
Well, I think it will just confuse the marginal people.
Yeah.
I've no doubt that that's the case. Anyway, proof of the pudding and all that sort of thing. Trevor, big game for Hawley last Saturday and a successful result.
Very good result, actually. Very pleased to restrict them to just, I think it's 159, which was significantly below par on a pitch. Well, the pitches are really hard and playing well, and the outfields are lightning fast. So, yeah, and then we chase them. A few little hiccups as always, but that's Hawley for you. We like to make the excitement. But yes, it was a good win. So I think we've been elevated to third now. So we're in with a shout, but I think it's the struggle. The two above us are a little bit, certainly one side, Claygate, I think a little bit of a step better than the rest.
Okay, and this was Shane Park that you were playing
against,
who slipped down to fifth.
Yes, I'm not sure if they were affected by non-travelling players and so forth, or holidays or so forth, and that is the way of the league. Sometimes you can find two or three key players are missing.
Yeah, that certainly happens, doesn't it? And do you find in the Fullers that sides change their make-up when schools and universities have finished?
You get a few people coming back from university because, as you know, we play everyone twice, so you do see a few new faces, but I don't think it's dramatic numbers back from university now. They seem to come back and then they've got jobs or holidays or travelling, so it's not a big impact.
It does happen. I was at Burgess Hill last Saturday, and they've completely reversed their fortunes, Tim. Burgess Hill flying high at the top of Division 3 East this year, having been relegated until the reassessment came about in Sussex for a third year running. And they were playing at Brighton and Hove seconds. Now, it wasn't university or school cricketers, but there was no Sussex cricket last Saturday. So half the Brighton and Hove firsts who've been playing for the rest of the season were in the second team.
Naughty.
Because there were three or four Sussex players playing for Brighton and Hove ones, and as it turned out, Burgess Hill striped them up good and proper, so including brother of M. Atherton.
Oh, really?
Yeah, who apparently is a bit of a case. He's picked up a few disciplinary points and so on. But let's talk about that aspect of the game later on. So, Trevor, tell us a bit about the season at Hawley so far and about what you realistically see as your prospects.
Well, we started off a little bit slowly, probably underperformed in a couple of games, but recently we're on a good run. We've only lost to teams above us. I think it's helped us as we've come into the full-length games as opposed to the 45-over game. But the team spirit, after a few wins, as you know, it changes, and everyone's riding quite high at the moment. So, yeah, it's enjoyable playing. Aspirations, if outside chance, in my personal opinion, but you never know. So we can keep winning, and who knows, the others may slip up along the way. But I think the gap's a bit too large.
I wouldn't want you to kick the ground from under your feet with the other Hawley players. Would you, I often ask this at the rugby club in Reigate, apropos of promotion. Obviously nobody needs to get relegated. Do you think Hawley are in a position to handle promotion at the moment?
It's very difficult because we got promoted last year by default through the back door. We ended up third and we were promoted. So the question was, would that be a step too far for us? And from what I've seen, no. And being perfectly honest, I think the standards are... I haven't seen a great elevation in standards in this league. So I can't really judge what the next league's like. So I think, if you're capable of winning your league, go for the next one. And I think we could hold our own. I think players, we've got potential who could raise their game and they could benefit from playing at a higher level. There's certainly a lot of the youngsters.
Good for you. Well, let's hope that success continues to come Hawley's way on the league front. Tell us a bit about the other sides in the league, and what's the spirit like? Is most of the cricket played in a decent spirit?
Yeah, it's pretty good. I think occasionally you get a little bit of niggle, but it tends to blow over fairly quickly. And I was very apprehensive when we started playing the two fixture arrangement. Hang on, if we've had a bit of a stormy one with one side, do we get there for the return fixture? But I haven't seen any of that. I think people are playing it in the spirit of the game. I'm not saying we don't get a little bit of a side sometimes and everyone gets a little bit over-enthusiastic, but I think it's a little bit like the Australian culture. It doesn't seem to hang over the game after.
That's important, isn't it? And inevitably too, I suppose, with men much younger than you and I, and even Tim playing, there's bound to be a little bit of abrasion occasionally. It's the nature of things.
Yes, I think there is a sort of age differential on that. I think when you're younger, you're going to get more excitable and so forth, and I think we've seen it all before, and maybe we're not capable of getting too excited about certain things, and you realise you've seen it all before. I must say, I do get a little bit frustrated at times when people are a little bit over-exuberant for the wrong reasons and so forth, but I, you know, hopefully I can be a calming influence on our chaps and G them up when they need to, and hopefully give a fatherly figure to them at times.
Well, I'm sure later on we'll be able to talk a bit again, Tim, not so much about Sandpaper Gate itself, but about the aftermath and the way that, you know, Trevor's just talking about Hawley getting promoted via the back door. Well, Smith and Warner, and I understand Warner is now captain of his Canadian T20
side. That's right, yes. Interesting that then that particular type of cricket's not included as part of the ban. I thought he was banned completely from all sort of levels of cricket, but clearly not. So I think he's playing for the Winnipeg Hawkers, is it?
I've no idea what they're called. That's a step too far. I've stood on the Brockton Oval in Stanley Park in Vancouver, which is an absolutely magnificent cricket ground. Both Boycott and Bradman said they thought it was the most beautiful ground in the world. But matting pitch, so on and so forth. And no, I think the Canadian T20 might have to wait for another day. Now, Trevor, you mentioned Claygate. Any other good sides in the division?
Well, Thames Ditton and Wongas, who actually came up with us last year, they won the league. Although last year we actually had the better of them on both occasions we played them, but they've got the better of us from one of the early games this season. So they're the other two in the running. But I think on our day we can give them a good run for their money. But Claygate, they've got one exceptional batsman who was a class above anything else I've seen this year, and he sort of just batted through the innings without a care in the world.
It's limited overs cricket, isn't it? Both matches, is it? Or one game timed and one...
We do a 45 over match, first four, last four, and then it's a 95 over match, which is actually a result match for the middle eight.
Yeah, OK.
I think it's so important to hang on to that, and Sussex have stayed that way. There was a lot of talk that it would go limited overs only, but they've stayed with the mixture. And, of course, we're exactly halfway through the league season as we speak, and we will have a round-up of the local league tables when we start the last section of the show. How's the ground looking at Hawley, Trevor, with all this heat?
Very brown, like a lot of others, but it's playing exceptionally well, and the outfield is absolutely lightning, so I think it's made for proper cricket shots as opposed to the thrashing you need to do when it's a little bit damper and so forth. So that sometimes is a little bit of a change when you've played on semi-indifferent wickets and you've got to hit the ball in the air and so forth, when you can just stroke it through for four. But, it's playing very well. The ground's looking very good. I think we've got contributions from a number of sponsors who've helped us equip things, covers and everything else. So thanks to all of those.
And obviously you're still out there playing, Trevor. Are some of the other members of your generation and a little older still propping up the picket fence in front of the pavilion and passing comment?
There's a few of them still around. Chris Allen is umpiring for us, so that's good. But apart from that, no, as you say, the others are still supporting the bar with an occasional barracking. And of course, you know, it's much easier to play from the sidelines, as we all know.
I was trying to work out when I was driving in whether I'd ever actually played for Hawley. I'm sure I must have done midweek at some stage, but I've played against you in a variety of guises. You're talking about proper cricket shots. I mean, in the old days, Hawley was the one place where you knew you could come and stand on the front foot and play shots and get value. I remember playing with the 40 club there, and I went in at 10 past one at 168 for one with 20 minutes to go to lunch, and got, I won't say the cheapest, I thought I batted all right, but I got 60 or 70 odd not out very, very easily. We declared 310 for three and lost.
Yeah, it was like that, and then it went through a poor patch and so forth, but thanks to the work on it and the groundsman at the moment, as I say, it's probably the best I've seen it for a number of years.
Is there any news of Bernard?
Bernard, yeah, he's a regular supporter. Yeah, he was sitting, he managed to get over the far side on Saturday, so yeah, have a chat with him. So he's doing well, he's coming and he enjoys seeing the ground as it is, as you know, is his passion for many a year.
This is Bernard Wright, Tim, who was the groundsman at Hawley. Paid groundsman, lived in the cottage next to the ground and made it what it was. And as a complete aside about Bernie, but I may as well say this, when the grammar school went independent and were kicked off what had been their own state school grounds, Bernard never hesitated. He said, come on, you can come down, you can have a cricket week at Hawley, and it's free gratis and for nothing.
That's
and,
good, isn't it? Yeah.
Is he 90?
I don't know his actual age, and he it's not
be,
something you sort of ask.
No.
But I'll ask him next time I see him here. I'm sure he'll be...
Must be well in his 80s. I've got this I've got this image of Bernard trotting round selling his sausages at the Old East Surrey Six-a-Side semi-finals and final.
I think I can just about remember that, yeah.
Which was a huge money spinner. What about events at the club, Trevor?
Well, we have the annual Skittles. That's usually a very successful sort of week, which culminates in the finals. So that must be coming up fairly soon. So that gets people involved. The club is very busy at times, quite a lot of activities. Cricket section, I think we've got more members this year than we've had for many a year, and you know, people have got to get their names down to actually play, so that's a good sign all around. So there's a little bit of competition for places, so it's quite buoyant.
And youth policy?
Well, a number of youth teams. I think the parents are doing a wonderful job, those who are running the team and so forth. I can't say I'm as closely involved, but there's certainly a lot of youth activity, and you know, we see them on Saturday when you turn up. They're tailing off their games and so forth. It's always fun to watch it, but a lot of enthusiasm, which is good.
Katie Field keeps me well supplied with reports. I don't have to go trawling for Hawley reports. They come on a Monday morning, week in, week out, which is terrific.
Yeah, well, people like that really do help. It's good, yeah, so that's a little bit of publicity, which is great, and thanks to her for doing that.
Makes an enormous difference. And if they're parents of players in the youth side now, in Katie's reports in recent weeks, Tim, we've had four successive reports of marathon feats by the evergreen Trevor Stevens, and I'm sure you need to ask him about his 2 sixfers and the rest
right,
of it.
Right, come on, tell us, Trevor, what happened?
Well, what happened was, I think, really, we've got a good field inside, and I've got quite a few youngsters who are only too eager to snaffle up chances in the outfield. So if I can put them in the right place and people can bash it really hard into their hands, I can wave goodbye to them. So we have quite a lot of fun with that, with me directing the field round and getting my key catches in place.
How would you describe your bowling style then?
Slow. I would describe it as actually my bowling style is bowling to the batsman. I'm not going to bowl them out, but as you know, all batsmen get themselves out. How many times have you been bowled by an absolute jaffer? Once in your career, twice in your career, you can remember them. It's always your mistake, so my job is to help them make those mistakes.
Flight and guile.
Yeah, I'd like to say.
Experience. And
experience. I think there's a little bit of that in there somewhere.
Yeah.
So, Trevor, 2 sixfers.
Yes.
Tell us about those.
Well, I you know, they just sort of happened, really. I couldn't say it's anything different. to be honest, I probably didn't bowl as well as on those days as when I bowled when I got zero. It just happens sometimes, you know. So, yeah, as I say, the guy snaffled up the chances, and I just was the fortunate one who delivered them. So, yeah, I can't really say much more than that, but 2 in 2 weeks, yeah, it's quite an achievement, really.
And then 22 wicketless overs for 85, which in some ways was more material.
Well, it was, actually, if you take that the last two overs probably went for 35. So you take that out of it. But, yeah, that's where I help the team, hopefully. I can tie up an end, and you know, if I'm bowling, it saves hiding me in the field, doesn't it?
Well, that's the on field and some of the events. Is there any prospect of ground development at all at Hawley?
There has been some thought about extending the pavilion, changing rooms. You know, to be fair, our changing room facilities could do with an upgrade, especially the opponents who, yeah, it's a little bit of an embarrassment, really, as playing members to see the opponents' changing room size, especially with the bags as they are these days. So there were some plans, but I'm not sure they've materialised as such. So, yeah, I'm not really part of that area of the club at the moment.
Yeah, the opposition dressing room has always been snug.
Yes, but it, you know, we like to feel it gives us the edge.
changing relays, but there we are. So we've broadly covered what's going on at Hawley. We've talked about the ground. Let's broaden things out just slightly, not just in the current league set up, Trevor, but let's talk about a few of our favourite grounds now and down the years. Where do you reckon's your half a dozen favourite places to play?
Ooh, that's a difficult one. I always like a visit to Outwood. That's typical village cricket. Yeah, I can remember going over there and not finding the way out when it's pitch black after the game. But it's a nice little place to play, and it's always friendly. And it's sort of, I think it epitomises sort of English village cricket in a way. And if anyone's over, especially we get relations from Australia, I always show them that, and they can't believe something like that. Do you really play cricket there? Of course we do. And it's a pleasure to do so. So I think we're actually our Sunday side. I think they're playing out with this weekend. I'm not certain, but it's coming. Other grounds, it's very difficult. You sort of don't think too much about it until you actually, oh, we're playing this team this week, and yeah, we turn up, oh, that's a nice ground to play in. I can't say overall, I think the quality overall has improved most of the time. The league coming in, you don't get real awful grounds anymore. You know, some, you know, you think they're sort of a little bit below the standard, but by and large, I think we're pretty lucky in the league we play in. It's very hard to pick out real favourites and so forth. As I said, Outwood strikes me because it's typically English. But there's some other ones around. You pass some, you know, the village green one. I'd like to find a village green one with the church and the pub round here, but there must be some.
Yeah, I'm not.
Any thoughts, Tim?
Well, I mean, I like playing at Headley. I always think Headley's, I mean, we've mentioned Headley before, but I love playing at Headley, and it's good for a batsman because it's a small pitch. You've got to be a bit careful with the road. If you hoik it over the big net and hit the you can hit the refreshment stand in the car park opposite. But I always like playing at Headley because it's a nice small, like you say, it's like a picturesque little village ground.
Yeah.
When I was playing for Leatherhead, we were in one particular league where we tended to be playing against sides that were using municipal grounds and trekking up to London sometimes, and they weren't quite, for me, they weren't quite as sort of picturesque, perhaps, as some of the grounds that I was sort of used to playing on. But I mean, there are some lovely grounds around. I mean, Headley Old Freemans play at Headley and at the Freeman School, and they alternate. And, I mean, those are two fantastic grounds to play on. You know, there are lots of nice grounds around here to play with.
Yeah, ventured into Sussex, I think you find a few more grounds. As you go, always going southwards, as we tended to do on Sundays, you had the nicer grounds.
I think the Surrey Downs League, there's a lot of nice grounds in the Surrey Downs League as well, which I think is a nice league. There's some picturesque grounds there to play in. I think, you know, I guess as you go up the leagues, you go in, and unless you're playing at the first 11 standard, you tend to be playing, I mean, like me, I was playing third 11, you tend to be playing in the sort of, oh, well, that's the third pitch over there. there, don't worry, and it's round the corner and behind here, and you know, yeah. So it's not always particularly as comfortable as it might be, but yeah, that's the way.
Well, I think we're lucky actually in Surrey, because I originally started playing club cricket in Essex, mm. and we played on a lot of council pitches yeah. in big parks, so yeah. if it went for four, you could chase it over two more pitches to get the ball back, but yeah. as I moved to Surrey, the quality of the pitches and so forth was vastly yeah. superior to that, yeah. and equivalent standard.
Yeah, yeah.
You mentioned Outwood. They, of course, have found their level and are now doing really well in Division 2 of the Kent Village League. Having been relegated a couple of seasons ago, they've suffered a few difficulties, and they're flying high at the top. So, with a bit of luck, they'll be promoted. And I think not only do they have their own home ground, but they have some lovely places that they go to play at in Kent. And it is a village league. Trevor, has Hawley been involved with the Slam?
Yes, in fact, I think we've qualified for the quarterfinals against South Nutfield, and that's next Tuesday, so I'm not sure if that's home or away, actually, but yeah, so that's the quarterfinal, so that's a nice little local game, nice evening out.
Matt Camp came in, Tim.
That's right, he came in earlier in the season, and I have to say Matt's done a great job at organising that particular tournament, because whenever we talk to guests of different clubs, they invariably are involved, so he's managed. I think he's got some. How many teams? He's
64.
64 teams.
64.
So you've done well to get to the quarter final.
Well, yes. You only play, I think, your leagues yeah. and so forth. Yeah. I'm not sure how yeah. many are being played, but
it's four divisions of four
yeah.
groups.
Yeah. Yeah.
And well, that's good. And do you get the pyjamas, Trevor?
We do play pyjama cricket, yeah. The youngsters play the pyjama cricket, the development league and so forth, and I think they've had some good performances there. I haven't put in a guess yet. I think it's 3 or 4 years since I've put the pyjamas on, but it's a bit energetic.
And do you know if your Slam side wears colours? Your Slam, Surrey Slam?
No, they were wearing whites, because we have this arrangement. I've umpired one of those, because you do 10 overs from each end, which is quite an interesting concept.
Yes.
And, you know, first 11 players can't bat to a certain number and mm-hmm. so forth. So it's a little bit complex, but everyone has enjoyed it and so forth, what I saw, yeah.
I think the Llamas, that's your son Richard's lot, were under strict instructions that it had to be second team players only or whatever. I don't think the organisers were too keen on having Premiership sides with 11 Premiership players and just bulldozing everybody out of sight. I mean, I would imagine that's still pretty strong. Trevor, while we've got a moment or two, and before we come back round the loop to Hawley, I mentioned your younger son, Richard. He's in the first team at the Priory.
Yeah, he's played regularly for the first team this year, I think. They're top of the league, as you know. Good result on Saturday. I think he had a good start to the season. He did a little bit of batting, which makes a change. Helped them turn around a couple of matches, which were looking to be heading the wrong way. But, so they're riding high, and he's thoroughly enjoying it still.
And he's a lot more than just a quick bowler, Trev. He can hit it.
I think he's got a little bit of extra weight to help him on that.
I remember vividly that innings of his for the grammar school at St John's Leatherhead. Not sure how long ago, it might be 10 years ago now, but it was disappearing into the road. It wasn't just finding the fence, and there's a big boundary that side at St
yeah.
John's.
Yeah.
Yeah, and expensive on mum and dad for bats.
But you take your price in your hands, so to speak, don't you, with bats these
yeah.
days?
Oh,
they're
yeah.
only bits of wood, and
yeah.
And there it goes. Trevor, before we take a break and ask Craig Stevenson to join us and ask you to take a back seat for 40 minutes or so, anything else about Hawley that you need or wish or want to let us know?
I think my wish would be a number three or number two batsman who will get 50 week in, week out and help the side along, and maybe a rapid bowler to knock them out. But no, we've got a good team spirit, and it's nice. Everyone assembles after the game, second 11 come back or we come back. And yeah, it's a good team spirit, and it's enjoyable to play, which is the main part of it.
Trevor, it's lovely to hear all about Hawley, and we're glad you're going well, and you'll take a bit of fresh air or perhaps a cuppa, and you'll come back about 20 past 8, so as the three of us can have a chat about the
certainly
game as a whole.
I'm delighted to.
Sussex and Surrey's 103.4.
Susie Radio.
Welcome back to part two of On the Front Foot, Susie Radio's Cricket Chat Show, the July edition thereof. And it's a great pleasure now to welcome to the studio for the first time Craig Stevenson from Tadworth Cricket Club. Craig, good evening. You're very welcome.
Thank you very much for inviting me.
It's very good to see you here. I'm going to lob you a nice easy ball to start with. League matches obviously this Saturday. Are Tadworth making any arrangements to accommodate the World Cup?
Actually, we are. Our first 11 game will start an hour earlier, and we'll break in between innings for the football. So both sides have agreed to that. And
that was a tough decision, wasn't it?
It was a very tough decision. And actually, our second team, unfortunately, the game has been postponed. The opposition can't get a team out. So I don't know if the football played role in that. But unfortunately, that could be the case this weekend, I think.
Tim, another idea that somebody had was to shunt all the Saturday fixtures onto the Sunday and cancel the Sunday fixtures. But there we are. Funnily enough, you mentioned City Freemans a little while ago. I don't know whether it was two World Cups ago, but I did exactly that. In a first team game that I was umpiring between the Grammar School and City Freemans, and everything stopped for 2 hours in the middle of the game. Anyway, it's up to you to find out about Tadworth, I think.
Well, this is the first time you've been into the studio, isn't it, Craig?
It is.
So your role at Tadworth, you're chairman, aren't you?
I'm the chairman of the club, yeah.
How long have you been chairman for?
I think just over 10 years now.
Okay, and it's all... How's things going down at Tadworth?
Yeah, I think we're a village cricket team that has some of its struggles. We'd always like to have more players available to us, but we do have a junior section, and that helps us to keep a throughput.
So you have two Saturday sides, do you?
We do. We have two Saturday teams that play in the Surrey Downs League.
Okay.
And we're in divisions 1 and 3 of that.
Right.
And then we have a friendly Sunday side that play always at home, and a variety of travelling teams come to play.
So we were talking about the different leagues earlier on with the Fullers, which Trevor's Hawley play in, and I mentioned the Surrey Downs League because I always think it's a very nice league for grounds to play at. Presumably you still play yourself, do you?
I do, yeah.
And you play in the first or the second?
I still hold on to playing in the first.
Chairman's privilege, is that
right? I did score a few runs last year, so I'm just about holding on.
Okay, so yeah, I mean, there were some lovely grounds that you play at, presumably.
Yeah, I mean, that was one of the attractions for me when I moved into the area in 2002. I was driving past Tadworth on a daily basis, and I thought that looks like a nice place to play. But we also play on some other very nice village grounds, Headley. Half the season at Headley, and then half the season at the school, and that's a pleasure to play there.
Yeah,
places like North Homewood and Westcott, and
it's really nice.
And it's not a lot of travelling.
No,
I mean the furthest we have to go is Old Woking, and so
I mean,
it's nice from a travel.
Yeah, I think that's a big thing as well. I think when we had the third 11 at Leatherhead until season before last, and unfortunately we couldn't get teams out each week, and we were playing in the Surrey Championship, and one of the ideas to try and keep that particular team going was to perhaps go into the Surrey Downs League, which I think would have benefited the club because, it as you say, there's shorter journeys, more picturesque grounds. Unfortunately, the decision went the other way. We carried on in the Surrey Championship, and unfortunately we had to fold.
Right.
You don't struggle to get teams out week on week then?
Well, this year we've had probably more of a struggle than we've had for the last 5 or 6 years, and along with some other clubs in the league. So I think, I don't know what is the cause of that. I mean, we've had a variety of reasons for our own players. This year some have moved abroad to summer at university, and you don't get them back till about now. And then others leave at this stage of the season for holiday. So we've, I think, missed out on getting two teams once this year.
Right.
So we are still determined to try and keep those two Saturday teams going, but it's hard work. And as I said earlier, we're always on the lookout for new players, people who have maybe had a gap from playing cricket and are coming back, or coming into the area.
Well, what's the sort of balance of age groups in the sides that you've got, in the senior sides?
Yeah, so, I mean, we have about 7 players that are under 25 playing in our first 11, and then they are made up, the rest is made up of olders. So some weeks we've got 45 plus players and 7 under 25, so it's a bit of a mix. You know, some of the stronger younger players go and play in bigger clubs, and we tend to pick players up later, or players that have had their fathers who've played at the club and stay with us. So you know, it's a little bit of a mixture, but we've got some very talented young cricketers who don't always want to play every week because there's lots of other things going on, but
do you find that the time, and we've talked about this a lot on the show, but the fact that there is this, especially I think amongst younger players, that they don't necessarily want to commit either week in, week out, or for that length of time on a Saturday or a Sunday. Do you find that's the case at Tavern?
I think we are trying to help that, and our league is trying to help that by moving to the 40-over win or lose format. I personally was not in favour of that 3 or 4 years ago when we moved to that. We tried a couple of seasons with a mixed format, half 40 overs, half win or lose. And I enjoyed that because you got the best of both worlds. But to be honest, in our league, the younger players want to play 40 overs, win, lose, knowing that there's a relatively defined time when you're going to finish. And then a lot of them stay at the club till 9, 9.30 still to support the bar, but then they've got the freedom to go.
The social, I mean, you've touched on the social side. Is it, there's a good social scene, is there, at Tamworth Cricket Club?
I think it's a good scene. Clearly, we'd always have liked to have more members, but I think there's a good camaraderie across the Saturday teams. The Sunday teams tend to have a distinct group of people who want to play on Sunday in the friendly cricket.
That's a little bit of a mixture
as well of people who would prefer to play that more friendly cricket with the visiting sides and the variety of teams that you get to play. So I think we've got a good social scene, and the juniors also, we're trying to rebuild. We had a 4 or 5 year period where we had a very strong junior section from under 16 right down to probably under 12, under 11. A lot of those players have moved on now, and so we're trying to rebuild the junior section and build that through. But on a Friday night, we can have 40 to 50 kids at the club and all of their parents, and it's a good place to be on a Friday night.
And do you find, when they come through, obviously, from the Colts, they start playing for the adult teams. You mentioned earlier that some of them move on to bigger clubs. Obviously, you try and keep them as much as you can.
Yeah.
I mean, you've got players in your senior sides who've presumably come through that junior section, have you?
Yeah, we have. We've probably, the 5 or 6 that I mentioned earlier, most of them have played in our junior cricket. Some of them have actually left and gone away to play maybe stronger leagues and have come back either because they weren't enjoying that cricket or it was the travel was too much. So I think we'll always get people leaving us to go and play better standard and perhaps coming back to us later.
I think there's much to be said for juniors playing at let's call them slightly smaller clubs, if you like, than the real big clubs in Surrey, because I think it's good for the juniors when they're in a club which feels like there's a community spirit. It feels like people are actually looking at them and trying to sort of help their game. Presumably you have coaches there and you have parents who are helping out, and it all feels like a nice environment, doesn't it?
And I think in the recent couple of years we've also gone with younger captains who are trying to encourage the younger players and are actually giving them a real go. So if they're batsmen, they're batting high. If they're bowlers, they're getting early overs. And I think that is helping us to develop those cricketers, and hopefully they'll stay with us. But if they don't, they'll thank Tadworth for helping their development going forward and bring them back.
Is there a girls section at all? Any ladies cricket at Tadworth yet?
Really good question. So we don't have a ladies section as such, but we do have a lady that's playing in our first team regularly.
Oh, right, okay.
We have at least two other ladies that have played in our second 11 regularly. One of those is actually playing for Durham University at the moment, and she played at Lords just recently. So we encourage ladies. In fact, we changed our facility last year to put in a proper shower facility for ladies so that we can encourage more of them to play. So in our juniors, we have still boys and girls age groups playing together, and I'm actually this year looking after the under 9 team, and I've been most rewarded by seeing the girls develop in that team and doing well with in that team. So we are trying to encourage more girls to play, and I think it's exciting that we do have a lady playing regularly in our first team.
How does that change the atmosphere? I mean, some league games I've played in can be occasionally bad-tempered affairs. Does having a lady playing change the sort of behaviour of players at all, is it? Do people maybe calm down a bit?
To be honest, I haven't noticed that too much. The lady that plays for us, Alice, is quite a feisty character in her own right. So she enjoys the banter side of the game.
Yeah.
But so I haven't noticed that too much. But you do notice that, you know, people maybe a little bit more less fluid in when they're batting and Alice is bowling because they don't want to get out. Yeah. And that's good for us because it's nice for them to be on the back foot.
Have you come across any other sides in the Surrey Downs League that have ladies playing for them?
I think not in the recent couple of years. Mm. There was actually a lady captain in one of the second 11s until a couple of years ago.
I'm surprised so there's not more, to be honest. Yeah. I thought there would be more ladies playing in sort of senior cricket than there actually is.
I haven't seen them, particularly in the first division. Mm. I'm not with the seconds for the third division games, but I've not heard recently that there has been. But we're certainly trying to encourage our... Yeah.
Well, the fact that you've changed the clubhouse to provide facilities is a big thing, isn't it? So
yeah, I think we were very pleased when we made that decision.
Yeah.
Can I just jump in then for a second, Tim? We've touched on ladies, we've touched on standards. What's the situation like at Tadworth, Craig, with respect to umpires?
So in our league, as a club, we are very fortunate. We have two umpires that are prepared to stand every weekend, or pretty much every weekend. So we are well served in our club, and we have at least two other qualified umpires that could stand if we needed them to. I'm one of those, and I'm still playing. I'd rather play. But so we are very fortunate. Many of the other clubs in the Surrey Downs League don't have a standing umpire, and so you rely then on players umpiring matches. To be fair, I've not seen too many challenges that brings, but there are matches that do, I think, get spoiled a little bit by that type of, you know, consideration of is it high enough quality umpiring. But that's the village cricket that we play, and I think people who are umpiring try and do it as fairly and as honestly as they can in the main.
Oh, I'm sure that's the case. Tim knows what my supplementary question is going to be. At Surrey Downs League Division 1 level, Craig, have the revised laws made themselves felt in any way, shape or form?
I think it's not been discernible, the huge change, to be honest. So as a player, I haven't noticed too many large differences this season, I have to say. No.
I think, yeah, I mean, we were talking about it earlier on, that the laws that they brought in have been, well, some of them are incredibly complicated. And as Trevor mentioned earlier on, I think it's a case where most clubs probably agree there's a common sense approach to some of those laws,
right,
which I think I'm sure is the case at Tadworth, is the same as it is at most other clubs.
Yeah.
You mentioned the ground or the clubhouse earlier on. It was a question that David asked Trevor earlier. How's your ground coping with this weather and all the sun? And
yeah, I mean, the square is very dry. Mm. It's had a lot of water this week, and so it's looking a little bit greener now. It's had a drink, but it's certainly been challenging, and the outfield is very brown, and I think you were saying earlier you get value for your shots. You certainly do.
Yes.
You know, if you miss a fielder now, it's four. And we have the challenge that we're surrounded by trees and woodland, so you can spend a little bit of time looking for balls at this time of year.
Facilities and establishment wise, Craig, is the ground actually on common land?
It is.
How does that work? Do you lease it? Do you maintain it? How does that operate?
Yeah. We maintain the area that the cricket is played on for cricket. So we have full maintenance of the square and the outfield. It is common land, so it's governed under an Act of Parliament, and the Banstead Commons Conservators are responsible for the area. But we have a relationship with them which allows us to play cricket between the 1st of May and the 30th of September. And you know, I think for the cricket club that works well. We own the land that the pavilion is situated on, and so that's not in itself common land. That was bought in, I think, the early 90s from a local church that owned that part of the land. So the the pavilion belongs to the club. As soon as we step outside, it's common land, and it's governed by the Act of Parliament. So it's very difficult for us to develop the green areas, because that's not the freedom that we have to do that.
And am I right in thinking that, sadly, the pavilion is a little bit exposed where it stands? Have you had one or two problems in the past?
Until this winter, in the 15 years I'd been at the club, we hadn't had any problem, because it is a little bit remote from the village. But this year we had a couple of breakings, or attempted breakings. Actually, our security has worked well for us. But there was damage, and damage costs money to repair. So we probably had our worst winter period for at least the 16 years I've been with the club this year, and that was disappointing.
It's unfortunate, isn't it? You're not alone in that.
No.
We've got about a minute, Craig. Let me just ask you about leading players in the club. It's your head on the block.
So we've got a very... for our league, quick opening bowler, Adam Baldwin. He's a good weapon to have, both to start and also at the end of an innings. And we got some very also good talent batting. Couple of all-rounders, probably two that you couldn't separate in terms of talent for batting, Joe Button and Steph Sander. Both bowl, spin, both bat. They're very destructive, and they're very handy to have in the team when they're playing. So I think they're from a first 11 point of view, they're the three players that I pick out.
That's very good of you, and as I say, it's your head on the block when you get back to the club later, or when this goes on our listen again. Gentlemen, thank you very much for now. It's nearly time to take a break. And that's the first hour of two on our On the Front Foot Cricket Chat Show here at Susie 103.4. This is the July edition. The summer is rolling on. We're exactly halfway through the league season. And when Trevor comes back to the microphone about 20 past eight, we'll start off with a look at the local league tables. And we'll carry on with as many reflections on the wider game, the pro game, and indeed the game at Surrey County Cricket Club as we can cram into the time available to us. But after the news and weather at the top of the hour, Tim will be taking up the themes again relevant to Tadworth Cricket Club with our first-time guest, Craig Stevenson, chair of the club, and we'll be looking forward very much to that before we move on to pastures wider. Welcome back to the second hour of the July edition of On the Front Foot here at Susie 103.4. My name's David Jay, Tim Bowling's in the co-pilot's seat, and our guest for the current 40 minutes is Craig Stevenson, first-time visitor to OTFF. He's from Tadworth Cricket Club, and we're going to hand straight back to Tim here and now.
Well, we've had a tweet from somebody called, who just calls himself Tim, and he obviously knows you, but Craig, because he's put, "Top stuff, Mr. Chairman, a really good listen, a credit to the club, but is far too modest. Best batsman in the club by miles, hashtag leading scorer." So when we asked you for the three top players in the club, you quite rightly never mentioned yourself. But would you like to expand on the leading scorer image?
Well, last year I actually was the leading scorer for the whole of the Surrey Downs League. It was over 800 runs in the season. It was obviously the best season I'd had for a while. This year's not going quite so well. The last two Saturdays I've had ducks both weeks. So
it's a great level, isn't it?
It is a great level. But I enjoyed that season whilst it lasted. It was nice to be able to show the younger players there was still life in the old dog yet.
Exactly right. And it's nice, isn't it, when you get to that point where you're seeing the ball like a footballer, aren't you? And you're just stroking it around the pitch. It's lovely. So you know this chap, Tim, do you?
Is it Tim Bennett, probably?
Well, it just says Tim underscore tweet, so he's kept himself reasonably anonymous.
He has taken a little bit of a sabbatical, if it's the Tim I'm thinking of, and it would be nice to have him back because he's a quality batsman as well.
Right, okay, well, that's good. Well, now we did touch on sort of talk of the ground and everything. Have you got sort of summer events going on this summer at the club?
Yeah, just the Sunday just gone was our sort of equivalent President's Day. But for the last two seasons, we've run a T20 type tournament for a charity, the local Children's Trust, the Brain Injury Unit. So this week, last Sunday, we tried the 100-ball format.
How did you get on with that?
We had six teams. Each of the teams played each other. Mm. And then the two highest run rates, we played in a 5-over thrash at the end of the day. Right. And the weather was so kind to us.
Yeah.
We had probably between 130, 150 people came during
the day.
The whole purpose was to raise the funds for the Children's Trust. We know we've raised at least £1,500 for the trust. We had cake stalls, we had some face painting, we had other activities for the children, and so I was very proud of one of our other key volunteers, Christoph Sander. He'd put a lot of work into that day, and I think it really paid off. And we had some good fun cricket, but we also had a lot of interface with the local community. And one of our challenges, because we are a little bit remote from the village, is to become part of the community, and that's the type of event we're trying to progress to do that.
I mean, that's a great charity. Have you done stuff for that charity before at the club?
So this was the second year that our major focus has been the Children's Trust. It's round the corner from the ground that we play at, and so it was the ideal opportunity. And we know that they also are supported by people like Phil Tufnell.
Yes.
And so that was a bit of a link. Phil actually lives quite close to the ground. So we were trying to think of other ways of becoming a greater part of that community spirit, and I think the 2 years we've run these games for the charity have worked out really positively.
Presumably, as you mentioned, sort of 150 odd people there, presumably a big percentage of that was locals as well, not just club members,
right,
but people coming from the village.
And you know, there were a lot of the junior cults came along with their parents, but we did seem to reach out to a few more members of the village this time round. Christoph spent more time putting out advertising. We tried to use more social media networks to get it out there, and clearly the weather supported the day, but I think it paid dividends, so we were very happy with that.
Do you find that social media is a big part now of a club like Tabworth, trying to get people involved, keep people involved, communicate? Do you think it's...
Yeah, I mean, we've got probably three or four people that are very heavily into the social media and keep our Twitter account going, our Facebook account going. We try to make the links into the local, you know, what's on in Banstead, what's on in Epsom, and try and use that facility to try and advertise the activities that we're doing, promote the scores for the matches. I think social media has been really positive on a Saturday afternoon, letting people who can't play know what's going on at the cricket, because they want to know, and they usually find out win or lose. They don't get to see the profile of the matches it's developing, and I think social media is good for that.
And presumably you're on Play Cricket as well.
We are.
I mean, that's a good tool, isn't it?
Right. The whole of the Surrey Downs League uses Play Cricket for results, and I think it's been a powerful change in the last 3 or 4 years.
So are there any other summer events coming up that you'd like to publicise?
I think it's July the 27th, we are going to have a Colts celebratory evening. At the end of July, we formally close our Colts sessions on a Friday night, but we'll probably still have some more informal sessions beyond that. Just the numbers dwindle with holiday. So we're going to have our Colts sort of awards and social evening on, I think it's the 27th of July. So that's our next major activity coming up. I think there'll likely be some events around the World Cup, dependent upon how far England managed to get.
Well, we're going to get to the final, aren't we? Obviously.
Yeah, and if we do, then the Sunday friendly will finish off with the final at the clubhouse, I'm sure.
Now, there was I thinking we'd already won it.
Craig, I thought we had.
Craig, can I just backtrack for a second? Because you mentioned the Children's Trust, and I was involved for many, many years when I was still working with the Tadworth Court run that the Grammar School in Reigate does. Used to finish in days gone by when mugs like me were there to marshal 240 kids across the road up past the Tumble Beacon.
Yep.
Used to finish right up at Tadworth Court, but latterly the club has been kind enough to allow them to finish at Tadworth Cricket Club.
That's right. The last few years they complete the race at the club. we open the clubhouse up, so they've got some facilities both for refreshments but also for toilet facilities, and you know, that also was a stimulus for us to get a little bit more involved with the Children's Trust, because they've been supporting that event for a long time.
Well, I think our next request of your good self must be to get a little bit more involved with the Children's Trust, and next time you come to On the Front Foot, perhaps see if you can bring Mr. Tufnell with you.
Right, that would be nice, wouldn't it?
I saw Phil Tufnell play in a game at City of London Freemans a few years ago, and it was a charity game, and it was the same week that he came out of the, when he just won the Jungle, and he was the last celebrity to arrive. All the others arrived, everybody got autographs and selfies and stuff, and then Phil Tufnell arrived, and literally all, I mean, there were just hundreds of kids surrounding him.
Yeah.
And when watching it from a distance, seeing these kids surrounding him, and we all know Phil Tufnell's a TV celebrity, but he wasn't really then, he just started into that area. My memories of Phil Tufnell was obviously as the bowler that used to smoke at the side of the pitch. Seeing him being surrounded by these kids just shows you the difference.
Yeah.
And they go on these TV shows, just incredible. Yeah, if you can bring him down, that'd be great. But so, well, things are going well though at Tabworth then.
Yeah, I mean, we're pleased with the state of play. We would like to have a bit of growth. Like every club, we would very much like to have more people who volunteer to do some of the core activities.
Yeah. Who are the unsung heroes at the club? We talked about good players, but obviously with a club, with clubs that are successful like Tabworth, there are people behind the scenes that do stuff that often don't get too much of a sort of publicity, if you like. Who are the people?
I think this is where I could get myself into trouble if I don't mention enough people, but you know, I'd pick out a few. So there are people like Mark Anthony. He has, in the last 2 years, really got to grips with the Colts section in terms of organisation, and really pushed that forward. And you know, we've got a lot of things to thank him for. There are people like the Griffiths family, who are very much stalwarts of Tadworth Cricket Club, that Paul and his son still play. Sarah's the scorer for the second 11, and they do, you know, certainly their fair share of work behind the bar of a Saturday evening. We've got, as well as umpires, we've got a couple of people who are prepared to score every week. So Bruce Paul and
I think it was Bruce that I was emailing originally. Yeah,
that's correct.
Yeah.
And then Sarah does scoring, but we've got, you know, other people who will score. We have a family, the Baldwin family, who travel up from Kent now at weekends to play, and their stalwarts, it's the lady that plays for us. So, you know, there's a lot of people. My own family are very heavily involved in the club, so I probably ought to mention.
So they're all seconded to help out,
yeah,
are they?
They are. And so, it'd be remiss of me if I didn't mention that they are an important part of the club as well. And there are other parents this year who've stepped up for the Colts section. So, I mean, you could always...
Yeah, there's always others.
Always others that you've got, and also others that you'd like to see. We've also, you know, Paul does a lot of our coaching. He's a level 3 qualified coach, and we have Mike Jacobs from Surrey as well, helps us out on a Friday because of his affiliation with Chinthurst School. So we have a link up with Chinthurst School, and Mike comes and helps us on a Friday night for coaching alongside Paul and myself and a couple of others. So you can't run a cult section if you don't have that type of support.
Sure. And you've been chairman how long for the club now?
Just over 10 years. It seems like it's disappeared in terms of time, and I do have my moments where I think it's probably time to stop. But it is a very, you know, it is a huge part of my social life, and I love cricket and everything that goes around it, and the club itself is you know, a big part of my
struggle to be able to get people to do the jobs in the club. You've mentioned people that have helped out and stuff. I think the problem with some clubs can be that it's difficult. It's the same very small group of people often that do everything.
Yeah.
It sounds like at Tabworth there's a lot of people doing lots of jobs. So obviously there's people that are prepared to help out.
Yeah, we do have people. I think it's the same as any club when we have our pre-season get the club ready. It's probably
people.
Five or six people.
Yeah.
You know, a guy called Mark Laurie, who also helps us with our groundwork. Mm. He's there every time.
Yeah.
You know, on a Saturday morning when you go, which five or six people are you going to get?
Yeah.
But when the season starts, there's a lot more willingness to help.
Yeah.
And you know, I think sometimes I look around and think, well, couldn't they just go and do that little job, you know, without us asking them to do it?
Yeah.
But that's that's human nature, and that's the life of a cricket club, and that's the way it is.
Do you find the after the game, the clubs that you're playing sort of hang around and have a drink with you in the bar afterwards, or do they tend to just sort of leave straight away in the Surrey Downs League?
Yeah, it's a mixture. There are some very sociable sides, and others that, you know, want to get back to their own clubhouse as quickly as they can to settle in for the night. So, I mean, I think most clubs have four or five people who would always stay for at least one drink. And so from that point of view, it's quite socially positive in terms of the league setup.
Is there any particular fixtures that you look forward to in that particular league?
Well, I mean, there's a lot of fixtures we like to play, and some often we don't win. I mean, East Horsley is the strongest team in our league right now, and we'd love to be able to beat them once or twice, and haven't managed to. They've got a lovely setting for their ground, but we like to, as you said earlier, there's a lot of really positive grounds to go and play at, so we look forward to most of the games that we play, and we have some special rivalries with some teams.
Tim, I'm going to have to cut you short. We warned Craig that time flies when you're having fun.
Right.
Must ask you, Craig, just before we finish, you've been involved in the Slam?
We haven't so far, and that's mainly because we don't think we'll be able to get enough players to the venues on time during the week. A lot of our younger players that are suited for that working in London or further away, so we'd like to be able to play, and we do play some friendlies, T20 type friendlies in our cricket week, which we sort of split either side of Presidents, but we haven't gone into the Slam. I think it's been good though for local cricket, hasn't it?
It's gone very well indeed. Now, as we wrap up, Craig, is there anything about Tabworth Cricket Club that you'd like to get off your chest on the airwaves of Suzy 103.4 before we finish?
No, I think just to reiterate, it's a very, welcoming, friendly village cricket club. We'd love to see more people there. Many people don't even know the ground is there in the summer because it's surrounded by trees. So we're on the Dorking Road opposite the Duke's Head pub, and we'd be very happy to see other new members to
Craig
join.
Stevenson, Chair of Tadworth Cricket Club, it's been brilliant talking to you this evening, and you will come back and talk to us again sometime.
Be very happy to. Thank you.
Suzy 103.4.
Welcome back to the third and final section of July's On the Front Foot here at Suzy 103.4. My name's David Jay, Tim Bowling is with us, and Trevor Stevens is back in the hot seat. Trevor, I'm going to not spare Hawley's blushes, you're third in any case. Before we do anything else, gentlemen, I'm just going to run down the various tables because I think that's important. So, Championship, County Championship, Division 1, we've got Surrey riding high at the top, and in Division 2, Sussex are in fourth place out of 10. Staying in Sussex, the Premier, Roffey, still just top, but by 6 points only now from East Grinstead. Ifield languishing last but one. Three Bridges won their top of the table clash with Haywards Heath at the weekend, and they go top, back top of Division 2. Crawley Eagles are third now in Division 3 East. East Grinstead seconds, three off the bottom. And in Division 4 West in Sussex, Crawley are just one off the bottom. They are having their struggles. Surrey Premiership, Reigate Priory dispatched Weybridge in their top of the table clash on Saturday, and they're riding high. They are 25 points clear now of Weybridge in second, and Banstead are surviving in sixth. Chepstow Coulsdon Walcountians, 8 out of 10 in Surrey Division 1. Dorking third in Division 2, Oxted and Limpsfield in ninth. Division 3, these are clubs that are out of our area, but some big clubs from days gone by. In Division 3, Epsom are second, Cheam are eighth, and Purley are tenth in Division 3. And the only local club in Championship Division 5 is Merstham, and they've had a couple of welcome wins, and they're now fifth in the table. 4 points there, covering fourth, fifth, and sixth. So all to do for Laurie Nicholson's side. In the Fullers Premier, Cholton CMO are third, and Lingfield fourth, and Newdigate seventh. Then we come to Trevor's team, Fullers Division 1, Hawley are third, and then the Downs. We've mentioned that Tadworth are in fifth, South Nutfield riding high in second, Salford, Sanjay Patel's side, are third, and Capel, three off the bottom. Headley Old Freemans, you've mentioned, Tim, they're topping Downs Division 2, Brockham Green are fifth, Salford's seconds are seventh, and And in Down's Division 3, Headley Old Freeman's seconds are in second place, and South Nutfield seconds in third, and then Capel 2s, Nutfield 2s, Tadworth 2s, down towards the bottom, and Ockley are almost propping things up. Now, I've said that we need to talk about Surrey. Let's talk about Surrey a little bit. And here we are at mid-season, and they are top of the county championship.
I know, who would have believed it? They've won five of their opening seven matches. They're looking to secure a first championship title since 2002, riding high. Rory Burns, a local lad, again, ex-Freemans. He's continuing his good form against Yorkshire. So doing well, Surrey, at the moment.
Why do we think it is that Rory Burns gets mentioned in dispatches but never gets within shouting distance of the England setup?
Well, I don't know. We talk about Rory Burns every single week, and every single week he seems to make runs, and every single week he's never in the running for England. I honestly don't know. I don't know why they're searching round for a good batsman in that position, and it's almost as though he's right in front of them. They won't pick him. I don't understand it. He should have been in the England setup a long time ago, not even just this season, but he should have been in the setup a long time ago.
Trevor, do you think county cricket attracts much interest from the members at Hawley across the board?
Yeah, quite a few go up there to watch occasionally and follow it. Yeah, I think it's interesting to follow, but yeah, it doesn't really have the strong prominence. I know a couple of members, but they're members of the club, but they only go up there a few games. I don't know if it has the real appeal, sort of. It's passing interest, but people, you know, it's not a conversation topic very often.
Sure, and we've talked on the show before about the way it's been even more marginalised this year. I noticed that the last round of matches included some pink ball games and floodlit matches, and Middlesex complaining like nobody's business that they had to bat under the lights, and they were rolled for 54 at Canterbury by Kent.
Well, yeah, I mean, I can understand why they might be frustrated, but the pink ball is ultimately going to replace the red and the white ball anyway, so, you know, they might as well get used to it. I think if something like that helps county championship teams and helps the game and brings people in to watch county championship matches, I think that can only be a good thing, because as you're quite right, Trevor, that the interest in county championship matches generally is pretty low. Apart from your stalwart members, the most casual cricket fans are just not interested in the county championship.
No, I think it's a time issue as well, yeah, to go and watch it. You know, I thought when I retired I'd go along and watch a county cricket quite often. I think I've seen one day since I've retired, yeah, and that's 7-8 years ago. Yeah. So, you know, you have expectations that you're going to do it, but you don't get around to it. No. It doesn't have the attraction.
No. The only day's championship cricket I've seen since I packed in teaching was the very first day of my retirement, when I deliberately took some friends to Canterbury, to the St Lawrence, to see Kent play Essex, and we stayed for about a session because they weren't really into it. No. I'd never been to Canterbury Cricket Ground before, so that was nice. You mentioned Rory Burns, Tim. Seven matches, 11 innings, 722 runs at nearly 66, and a best of 193. It's a good performance, is that?
Yeah, it baffles me. It baffles me that if there was a sort of glut of batsmen in that position, then I could understand why he wouldn't get a look in. I would hope that now Ed Smith is a national selector, that he might actually cast his gaze slightly wider than the previous regime. I'm surprised that Rory Burns hasn't already figured in the England setup with Ed Smith. I'm hoping that Ed Smith will bring him in. Whether he will or not, I don't know. It would be terrible for Rory Burns and for English cricket if he didn't get to play top flight test cricket.
Wouldn't it just? Ollie Pope tops the county batting averages. 9 innings, 654, best 158 not out, average 93.43. Now, he's a Cranleigh schoolboy, so he's been brought up on some decent wickets. It's their first team ground is absolutely lovely. He's a wicketkeeper batsman. Mm. Folks is a wicketkeeper batsman. Mm. We've got the Butler Billings Bairstow saga going on above them. Isn't it extraordinary how suddenly we've got this complete and utter glut? Do you think that Pope and Folks will stay at the Oval, or is it going to be a Butler and Lancashire thing?
Well, I can't see them both staying there in the long term. I think one will edge the other out, and I think the other will then try and find first team cricket elsewhere. I can't see both of them staying there, to be honest, which is a shame. But
Tom Curran's disappeared from the radar, Trevor.
Good question. Where's he gone?
He's out of action at the moment.
He's got left side strain,
which is why he's been laid out of the England one day squad and replaced by his brother. But you know, there's a case in point of somebody who went to the IPL, took the dollar, sat on the bench for however long he was out there, played no cricket at the beginning of the season, now he's injured. You really do just wonder about the wisdom of some of it. There's also a story going around that Willie had to fight to retain his Yorkshire contract because of his IPL commitment.
Yes.
Well, that means to say that's the modern game, isn't it, unfortunately. I mean, I guess with somebody like Tom Curran, you can't really blame him for, you know, he's a young lad, someone's waved a cheque under his nose, you can't really blame him for taking the money.
Absolutely.
You know,
not.
I mean, I know it's maybe not necessarily the best for his game, but if someone is prepared to pay you that amount of money for a 6-week stint or whatever it is in the IPL, I think I'd probably take it, in all honesty. But
well, I certainly would if offered, but I don't think I'll get that question arising.
You never know,
I think it's very disruptive, this IPL. Yeah. I turned the television on just before coming here, and they were talking about Dwayne Bravo, and apparently he's played for 18 2020 sides.
Mm. Anyway, I know.
They're just mercenaries, really, unfortunately, and I think it's going to be very difficult. Whether you agree with the Adil Rashid sort of scenario or not, I think it's the way it's going to go. People are going to decide, I'm going to play for the money and I'm going to be a 2020 player. And there isn't time for the rest of it then, because there's too many opportunities.
Well, no, and we mentioned it earlier, the county championship, as a professional player, it's a long season as a pro, in that if you're not getting England cricket, if you're just turning out week in, week out, and you're sort of decent but middle-ranking county player, they're long, long seasons. I mean, Simon Hughes wrote two very good books about his life as a middle-ranking player for Middlesex, that are both well worth reading. And, you know, he made the point then, even back then, so it's probably the same, well, it's the same now, that you're turning out in these games, there's very little support, and it's just, I think he described it as a lot of hard yakka, didn't he? So,
oh, that's Simon Hughes, the analyst, absolutely. And a very fine book, and an amusing one as well. I won't actually go back over how he describes my former pupil, Andrew Babington, of Surrey, Sussex and Gloucestershire. I think the phrase was a lunatic fast bowler, but anyway.
I would totally endorse that, having been on the receiving end.
speaking of bowlers, I think, in actual fact, you can look at Surrey's strength. I've got the averages back in front of me again now. Morkel, 16 at 15. Ricky Clark, 27 at 18. Sam Curran, 21 at 19. The young spinner, Verdi, 22 at 25. And Jade Dernbach, 21 at 27. That really is victims shared around, isn't it?
That's the Curran brothers, I mean, putting aside any sort of taking the dollar in India, those two are huge talents, I think, which will pay dividends for England going forward. I mean, they obviously, their father was Kevin Curran, the Zimbabwean player, so they come from good stock, and they have both performed brilliantly. Watching them play as young lads, they're absolutely superb.
Yeah, well, we've actually got a player who's joined us last year, Ross Nell, just come from Zimbabwe, and he actually coached them as juniors, so he's a strong advocate. Personally, I'm not sure they've got the real edge to make it at that level. I think they're good. They've got the newness on the scene at the moment. But are they going to be there in 5 years if they're not quite sure which direction they're going to take? Playing 2020 and then reverting to red ball cricket, I think it's a very different challenge. Yeah. And you're going to get a bit mixed up of what you're trying to do.
Mm. I think they do need guidance, don't they? They need someone to sort of guide them properly through, as you say, whether they're going to play white ball cricket, red ball cricket, how their career is going to go. They do need somebody there. But we'll see.
Interesting
times.
I think that, you know, if I were a betting man and accepting the need for left-arm seamers, as it appears at the moment in all forms of the game, I would, if I were a betting man, I might think that Katie George, who came into the England women's side last week and bowled sharp and left-arm over, might have more longevity than Sam Curran. I could be way wide of the mark there, but there we are. Now, hot off the presses, the Cricket Discipline Commission have released a list of fixed penalty directive breaches from June. Jade Dernbach, Morne Morkel and Mark Stoneman, all on the end of reprimands. Dernbach reported for using language that in the circumstances is obscene, offensive or insulting. Stoneman, a level one breach showing dissent at an umpire's decision by word or action, and Morkel reported in Surrey against Hampshire for a combination of both those. So apparently the penalty for each offence is a reprimand. Penalties remain on the players' records for a two-year period. The accumulation of 9 or more penalty points in a two-year period results in suspension. I've got one other thing while we're at the Oval. The headline is Blowers, i.e. Henry Blofeld, is stumped as the Oval's gas faces redevelopment. Apparently there is a plan to turn the one big gas holder into a modern block of flats tucked inside the original frame, and the other remaining gas holders may well disappear. So
I always thought they were grade 2. Are they not grade 2 listed or grade 1 listed?
Under controversial plans, it says here, the grade 2 listed structure is to be dismantled and rebuilt with a modern block of flats tucked inside.
That's wrong, isn't it, really?
Well, there we are. That's Surrey and that's the Oval. And I've felt for a while, Tim, that we do neglect the county a little bit. So no apologies for
that.
Well,
they've also just put in an application to develop the actual ground, I believe. Well, they've had CGI images released today. They're going to try and raise the capacity of the ground by 2,500 to 28,000 by April 2021. Now, they're talking about putting... on top of the Peter May stand, there's going to be two tiers added to be named Lock and Laker to recognise that the Lock and Laker stand that once joined the Peter May stand and the pavilion will no longer exist. And there's going to be further roof terracing, and they're going to have a building called One Oval Square curving around the perimeter of the ground, apparently. So lots of stuff going on at the Oval, lots of development work to try and turn it into a, well, let's say a 21st century ground. Well, they've done a lot of work on it already. But yeah, you're quite right. Lots of stuff going on at the Oval.
And at Lord's, Trevor. I suspect you and I are old enough to have the sense that whatever they turn it into next, the Oval will always be the Oval.
Hopefully so, yes. I think there's a lot of tradition in these grounds, even, you know, Old Trafford. You see the development there, which has now been accepted.
Yeah, well, it was like the old OCS stand, wasn't it? I say the new OCS stand. I mean, when that was first talked about being built, there was all sorts of problems, wasn't there, with planning permission and the flats behind that couldn't get the view into the ground. And
yes,
now, when you go to the OCS stand and you go up on the roof terrace of an evening, it's lovely up there. So, it does eventually.
Yeah, things have got to move forward. Yeah. Things can't stay still, unfortunately. Yeah.
Last word on Surrey. I haven't got the scorecard in front of me. I've just got the scores. But Lords tonight, of course, what has always been the Great London Derby, Middlesex against Surrey. And Surrey only posted 158 for 6. I say only. We might have time to talk about that a little bit in a moment. But Middlesex have slumped. They're now 104 for 5, needing 55 off effectively 8 overs. So that could be anybody's, I reckon.
Quite tight, yeah.
Very tight indeed. I should just mention, Trevor hinted at this earlier, I should just mention the lineup for the Surrey Slam quarter finals. It's Woodmanston Warlords against Headley Dragons, Outward Outlaws against Lingfield Lancers, Priory Llamas against Kenley Hurricanes, and Hawley Hackers against South Nutfield Mavericks. And in the plate, Purley Pumas against Brockham Bandits, Oxted and Limpsfield Grasshoppers against Smallfield Foxes, Chipstead Stags against Burheath Hurricanes, and Crawley Cheetahs against Mercy Magics. And again, hot off the press, I've just had this from Matt Camp a couple of days ago. Here come the girls. The Surrey Slam ladies competition starts next year. Anything you made of the Royal London final quickly, gents?
Well, I think, was it Hampshire posting the biggest ever total in the final at Lords? They beat Kent by 61 runs to win the cup, I think. Now, I struggle to pronounce the guy's name. Is it Riley Rousseau?
Riley Rousseau. He's a South African, Saffa, yeah.
125, 9 fours, 3 sixes, helped them on to 330 for 7. Good performance.
It's interesting you mentioned South Africa, and when we know that there are connections here, there and everywhere these days, but Rousseau, and similarly for Kent, Heino Kuhn, had a tremendously successful season with the bat, and then got half wrecked in the final when he fell over somebody and got run out.
It was interesting, Joe Denley, though, taking 4 for 57, I thought, in the final there, for a guy that I always thought was a great batsman and should have played for England a lot more, to actually be, well, be remembered in dispatches as a bowler that day. He did. I thought he did really well. It was a shame he never played more for England, Joe Denley.
It's wrist spin again, isn't
it?
They've done away with the side Ajmals. They've done away with the ones who were so mysterious that their action was suspect. And now, I'm sure we'll come on to this in a moment, purely in terms of the T20 game at Old Trafford the other night, when India put English cricket back in a very firm perspective. But perhaps before we do, and we've touched on the Royal London, we've touched on the T20, time is running out. What have we learned from the England-Australia white ball series, 6-6, 6-0, and what about 481 for 7 and then the women running up 250 in a T20?
Well, I mean, white ball cricket clearly was prioritised when Trevor Bayliss came in as coach. He's done a great job turning that team round and making us ranked number one in the world. Unfortunately, it's been to the detriment of the Test side somewhat. But leaving that aside, in terms of white ball cricket, we were playing a pretty weak Australian side. I'm not sure it's really taught us much, in the sense that I think, had we not won that series 5-0, I think there would have been questions being asked. Even if we'd lost one game, I think there would have been questions being asked of England. I think Australia are in a fair amount of turmoil still with what's going on. I think they came up against a strong England side, and an England side who'd just been beaten by Scotland in what was an amazing game. And I think England felt they had something to prove, which... did they? I'm not sure they did prove anything. They did what they had to do. I think it's good going into the World Cup that we're still number one, but I'm not sure we learned
anything.
Well,
will we be after the Indian series? Because I have my, looking at that, it was chalk and cheese to playing against Australia. Australia were pretty spineless, to be honest. I don't know what's taken the stuffing out of them, but they didn't have that Australian grit or whatever that you used to. But the Indians really have, I think, the cat amongst the pigeons. It's going to be interesting to see how we adapt to that in the coming matches.
Well, also, we're playing on pitches which are very dry now because of the weather, and we're not used to playing on those type of pitches. You bring in a left-arm spinner like the Indians did, and he just took us apart. We didn't seem to have any answer to it. So,
well, a lot of our players have played the T20 format in India, so they've had a little bit of experience of being bombarded by these so-called mystery spinners and so forth. So it's going to be part and parcel of 2020 and, I think, the bigger game.
Yeah.
And there's Virat Kohli saying how wonderful it is that there are English players in the IPL now, and everybody knows one another and they get on with one another. Still pretty darn ruthless when it came. Can I just backtrack to the Australian series for one moment longer? I see Graham Swan, no less, is quoted today as saying he actually felt sorry for the Australians.
Graham Swan said that today.
He actually felt sorry for the Australians. And I'm bound to say, Tim, I sat there and cringed in the end, because it was just no contest.
Yeah, I mean,
and I want to see a contest. You know, the only time I really sat on the edge of the seat was in the final ODI, when England were as complacent as you like. They chucked it away. They were 114 for 8, and for Butler to mastermind that win at a 5-0 series result,
I think that was his slowest. Didn't they say that was his slowest ever 50 or something, which shows you that he's capable of putting in a measured response. But then you have to ask yourself, why are we playing Australia now? Because these fixtures were done for what reason? The only reason these fixtures have been put in is to make money. And I mean, we may not get time to talk about it tonight, but there's all this talk. The West Indies are trying to bring in a fair distribution of the money.
Yes.
You know, and that is a case in point. An England-Australia one-day series in the middle of the summer, no tests until August the 1st, you know, it doesn't make any sense that that tournament should be played. There's no reason for it.
I suppose that with the World Cup coming up in ODIs, and there's a T20, two T20 World Cups in 2 years, aren't there, then? I suppose if the sandpaper gate thing hadn't happened, and if Smith and Warner and Mitchell Marsh, who's injured, and the three fast bowlers had been here, it might have been a horse of a very different colour.
Yeah, possibly, but even if that were the case, it's to me, it's over. Kill. You keep bringing the Australians over here, we keep going over there, and all it does is detract from the importance of those two teams playing, you know, and it's totally wrong.
Are the women not quite the finished article in spite of their success in the T20 Tri Series and all those runs that they scored? There's a little bit of a brittleness in that side as well, to me, I think. But it's been great fun having, you know, wall to wall, men's and women's ODI and T20 cricket on the box for about 3 weeks. But absolutely phenomenal. Let's go to Messrs. Chahal and in particular Kuldeep Yadav. I mean, let's be honest, Trev, we've been around a year or three, you and me. How many Chinamen and googly bowlers do you come across? Not many.
If anyone can do it, they're not going to be playing at our level, to be, if they can bowl it. But you talk to your colleagues and so forth, most of them want to play the medium paces. As soon as anyone's slow who can just about put it on the spot, they don't want to take the initiative, and they're shying away. And, you know, more and more slow bowlers are getting more and more overs because of it, because people are not prepared to use their feet or they're crease-bound.
He was giving it plenty of flight, wasn't he, as well, when he was bowling? And you know, he knew exactly the weak spots to try and
They were pretty poor dismissals, the two stumpings, because most of us could, you know, we can play forward without falling over, can't we?
Yeah.
Well, and
sometimes.
and you know, if you're going to go down, get close to it. And
we've all got pads.
Exactly so. But I thought he bowled ever so well, notwithstanding, you know, 5 for in 4 overs and 5 for 20, was it?
24, yeah, 5 for 24.
It's enjoyable watching that, though, isn't it? Something slightly different, variety, the batsman not just putting the bat through and the ball sailing into the grandstand.
It's a contest, and the balance, overall balance is restored, and I think it's important for England to have a bit of perspective at the moment.
Do you think that performance by him was reminiscent of sort of Shane Warne coming on the scene and initially playing for Australia and suddenly bursting onto the scene? Do you think that there was any sort of similarity? I know they're different, one's a leg spin and one's a left arm, but in terms of how they've started the season with a big sort of initial performance, do you think there's any similarities there between how this guy's from India is now coming onto the scene?
I think it's too early to tell. Yeah. I think it was the same probably with Shane Warne as it was, but you know, he prevailed over such a long time and such a superb bowler. Time will tell, but there's been a lot of these spinners coming out of the subcontinent and so forth, and they've suddenly faded away and another one comes in. So they have their 1 or 2 years, but, you know, Warne survived how many years? Yeah. And he was, you know...
Put it this way, I wouldn't be surprised to see India picking Kuldeep Yadav in the test team. And I wouldn't be surprised to see him having a very material effect on some of our runaway England batting. So that was a chunk of cold water as far as England were concerned, just as the footballers were on the up and up. The other thing that I thought was a great shame was the mismatch between Ireland and India in those two warm-up games. And I'm just looking, you know, who was really bothered about the Sri Lanka-West Indies series deciding test match of three, played at the Bridgetown Oval, ground empty, wicket lousy, low-scoring game. And West Indies are now playing Bangladesh, who they bowled out yesterday for 43 in 18 overs. You know, that's not a contest. I mean, West Indies 398 for 8 now. It's
they were 201 for 2 at the end of day 1, weren't they? Yeah, so yeah.
It's worrying, isn't it? Because, you know, when I was putting this schedule together tonight, I mean, I've got West Indies down there in the middle of Ireland and Scotland and Afghanistan.
You know, I was going to say that to you. The fact that you've listed the West Indies under minor teams and minor nations is says everything you need to know. It's terribly sad for the West Indies to be in that position. We talk about it every month, and we talk about the fact that the West Indies have slid from this massive side when I was growing up, sort of 70s and 80s, to the team now that can barely scratch around and qualify, or, you know, just about qualify for the World Cup. And they qualified on well. They were very lucky to get into the World
Cup. Yeah, but you look at their selection, you know, because they've got all these mercenary players.
Yeah.
If you took all these players together and pulled them back and they could pay them the appropriate rate or whatever, they'd be up there, you know.
We'll have to try and get the...
Did you know, Trevor, that Johnny Crave, who's an old Rigation, is now the chief executive of West Indies Cricket?
No, I didn't know.
Well, we'd hoped to get him in when they were here, but unfortunately it didn't work out.
You're not allowed to call it the West Indies. You've got to call it the Windies now. They've rebranded, haven't they? They're now officially the Windies.
Yeah, they may be rebranded.
I don't think it makes much difference to the end result.
I won't mention what the Channel 9 song called Pakistan, because I'd be done for racism, but is that going to happen as well?
Well, yes.
A tri-series in Zimbabwe with Pakistan and Australia, off the back of what's happened over here. Aaron Finch goes out and makes 172 in 20 overs off his own bat.
Broke his own record, didn't he? For the fastest. Was it one of the fastest?
Biggest, I think.
Yeah, biggest.
T20 centuries.
I think it was the largest international T20.
Yeah,
and I think he was just short of the biggest ever for domestic as well, which Chris Gayle I think still holds at 175, I believe. So yeah, I mean, unfortunately, Zimbabwe are in all sorts of problems at the moment. They've had Brendan Taylor came back to the national setup, and then in trying to put together a players' union, has incurred the wrath of the Zimbabwean cricket board and has been dropped. A load of the players, the top players, Sean Williams included, is one of their best batsmen. Has been one of their best batsmen probably for the past 10 years. I think half a dozen weren't being paid. They complained to the Zimbabwean cricket board and they were all dropped. So that side that's playing in that particular game is a very, very weak Zimbabwean team. And they have actually got some really good players, but once again, as we know, the politics in Zimbabwean cricket is terrible, and it just has caused so many problems for them.
Now, talking about big hundreds, Callum McLeod, 140 not out for Scotland. England stuffed off the park in an also-ran, according to them, one-day international. And Ireland may have been rolled over by Pakistan to an extent, and now by India, but at least Ireland are playing. Scotland beat England. Callum McLeod, 140 not out, goes back to play for Bexley in the Kent Premiership, and Scotland's international season is over in the middle of June. What's that all about?
Well, again, I mean, we touched on it. We touched on it before, and it just doesn't make sense. You know, that you've got these associate countries who are really, really progressing. Cricket is the only sport in the world where the World Cup is being reduced in size. I just don't understand it. I would increase the size. There's some great teams coming through now, and then they're just not getting the exposure and the money that they need. You know, I mean, Scotland, they won the... they beat, where are we, T20 Tri-Series, they beat the Netherlands, thrashed the Netherlands, scored 221 for 3, bowled out the Netherlands for 106, you know, and won a Tri-Series tournament.
England are going to have a 3-match series against the Netherlands in the new ODI World Championship, or whatever it's called. It's interesting, isn't it? We must dwell briefly, because time is against us, on Afghanistan. We were talking two shows ago, maybe one, Tim, about Ireland's first test match. Afghanistan went to India and lost in 2 days. India got 350, not much more than that, and Afghanistan 103 and 109.
India got 474.
Oh, did they?
Yeah, 474, and then Afghanistan 109, as you say, and 103. They lost 20 wickets in a day, unfortunately. Afghanistan, 2-day defeat in Bangalore. So,
but
that's not going to attract paying customers, is it? You know, the gulf between some of these sides is just too big. You've got to condense it a bit. You've got to play on a level playing field.
But in terms of individuals, and individuals from the IPL in particular, Sussex have picked up Rashid Khan now for the Blast.
Yes, yep.
You know, we've been talking about Kuldeep Yadav. Well, Rashid Khan more than held his own and baffled good players in the IPL. I know you can't stand the IPL, Tim, but so he's going to be at Hove. That might be worth a trip one evening. And the other one, Mujibur Rahman, is going to be at the Aegean Bowl for Hampshire. And the comparatively ordinary off-spinner Nabi, but he is an all-rounder, he bats as well, he's going to be playing at Leicestershire. So you really only need somebody to pick up the Nepalese mystery spinner who played in the IPL, whose name I can't call to mind at the moment. And it what you said about Adil Rashid's absolutely right, isn't it? Mystery spinners in short form cricket.
There was a a Priory player at Sussex as well, wasn't there? Scored 56.
That's Michael Burgess, yes, the wicketkeeper batsman. Yeah. That's part of what I was talking about with Brighton and Hove earlier on. The Sussex players were available. Burgess played for the Priory last Saturday, got 36 in a few minutes and gave it away. But there it was, yes, fascinating. So with about 3.5 minutes to go, gentlemen, let's discuss the prospects, finally, for two more T20s, three one-day internationals and five tests against India.
Well, I've said it earlier on. I can't remember a summer where we've gone for so long, during a summer, with no test cricket now until August. They're packing these T20s in. They do it for the money, I get that. I'm not a huge fan. Personally, I wouldn't play international T20 cricket. I would just leave T20 cricket for the IPL type clubs. I just think it's stick to the ODIs and the test matches. I don't know. What do you think, Trevor?
I think it's got a place now, and it's going to be there for ever and a day. And as there's a squeeze on the mid-range cricket, but I still, you know, I believe the 50-over cricket, as I said before, is something that we as club players can actually relate to. Mm. We're never going to play more than a one-day match. 2020, playing at club level, is a completely different arrangement. The ball doesn't sail out of the park, or if it does, you can't get it back. So, yeah, I think it's got to be more balanced. So I agree with you. In England, we can sell out test grounds. Play in India, we'll sell out test grounds. No problem at all. So I think it should be more central, you know, while there's still a market for it.
In terms of selection, do Moeen Ali and Sam Billings have England futures?
Sam Billings, I think, has had his chance and has shot his bolt at the moment. Moeen Ali, probably on the cusp at the moment. It could go either way. I think they like him as a utility player with two options down there.
If you want to win knockout games, do you want somebody who plays brainless shots and the same brainless shot over and over?
I think Moeen's had his chance as well, to be honest. I think he's had some great performances, but I think there's other people queuing up now ahead of him, I think. And I think he might possibly feature in future white ball cricket, red ball cricket. I think unfortunately, he's got no chance anymore.
So who do you see as the off spinner?
Well, we've tried different players, haven't we? I don't know. I mean, in terms of a spinner, I would stick with Bess and see how he goes. I mean, he's performed very well. I suspect he'll turn into more of a batsman that can bowl a bit.
I agree, yeah.
But he's young. He looked like he had something about him. I would try him.
Left armer, turn it away from the bat. Jack Leach.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, there are options for England. You know, we'll just have to see how it all plays out.
But what about? I mean, we're not really in the predictions business, are we? But forget the knockabout white ball stuff. What about the Test series?
Close, I think. Close. I wouldn't like to call it. It could come down to the dry spell and turning wickets, in which case India will certainly have the upper hand.
Of course, by two test matches in September, it could be pouring with rain and we're back to green seamers.
Well, that's true. And you're right, that could make a huge difference. But again, it will depend which England team turn up. Will it be the team that turned up in the last test against Pakistan? Then we've got half a chance. If it's the team that turned up at the start, we're going to get absolutely annihilated. So, I wouldn't even...
Well, we've got niggling problems with the two fast bowlers. Will they be available?
I think if we beat India this summer, it will be an amazing victory. I suspect India will probably win 2 or 3 nil.
Lancashire have actually organised an extra second 11 friendly, Anderson can play before he gets into the next county championship game.
Yeah. Well,
and Broad has been limping, hasn't he? They say, oh no, you know, there's nothing. And then, you know, for so long we were looking at, oh, there's so many cabs off the rank, and then we seem to be short of fast bowling. There, gentlemen, we must leave it. Trevor Stevens from Hawley Cricket Club, been a great pleasure to have you back with us, and I hope we'll see you again in due course.
Look forward to it.
And Tim, thanks to you.
Thanks a lot, David.
You've been listening to On the Front Foot, Susie Radio's cricket chat show. That's the end of our July edition. We'll be back in August for some more summertime news, and we'll be well into that Indian series by then. I'm David Jay. All that remains for me to say is thanks for listening tonight. Hope you enjoyed what we've been nattering about. We'll do it all over again next month.